Women make up about 24% of workers in careers that focus on science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM for short. In 2017, cosmetic company L'Oreal selected 5 postdocs for their annual Women in Science Fellowship. One of the recipients is a researcher based at the University of Nevada, Reno. Our reporter, Ann Gray, visits Felicity Muth at her lab, where she's studying how bumblebees learn.
Thanks for having me at your lab. So can you show me what you do here?
Of course, yes.
Great. Oh my gosh.
So these are, you might not have seen bumblebee colonies before, because they typically nest underground. We've got a few hundred workers and a really big queen. Most of my research has been looking at how bees learn about the flowers that they visit. They're really good at learning and remembering and making decisions based on their memories. And so I use bees to try and understand learning in a broader sense. So I do that by putting out artificial flowers, and I can tag an individual bee. I stick a number on the back of the bee, and I can tightly control the bee's experience. And then based on its experience, I can see how it learns and how it makes decisions.
How did you become interested in bumblebees to begin with?
Well, so my PhD, I actually worked with birds, worked on bird learning and bird decision making. And at the end of the PhD, I started reading a lot more about bees, and people are often surprised to hear about how good bees are at learning. I would say they're kind of obsessed with learning in the same way that, say, dogs are specialists at smelling. So as somebody who's interested in learning and about how animals learn, bees are just a really useful animal for looking at those kinds of questions.
How can you tell when they're learning?
That's a good question, and I think that even scientists have trouble with this sometimes. So we have to do really tightly controlled experiments where one bee, for example, I give her a very specific experience. So it might be that on these fake flowers that I have, that one particular color of flower always has pollen. So say yellow flowers always have pollen and blue flowers don't have pollen. And then I can test her and I can see if she goes mostly to search for pollen on yellow flowers. And if she does, then it's an indication that she's remembered, okay, I need to go to these yellow flowers to find pollen.
And the work that you do also looks at the effect of their cognitive abilities due to pesticides, right?
So I've been working with one particular group of pesticides, which are called neonicotinoids, and they're the most commonly used pesticide in America. We use them on all kinds of crops, like almond crops, is one of the big ones in this area. One of the effects that neonicotinoids seem to have on bees is affecting their behavior, and it might also be affecting their ability to learn and remember and think about things. So I've been doing some experiments recently in lab looking at how these neonicotinoids might affect their behavior. I've only been working on this project for a few months, and so I don't have any results quite yet that I can talk about because they're not published yet. But most of my research to date has been so-called basic research, so trying to understand the fundamentals of why things are the way that they are. So for the last few years, I've been working on how bees learn about pollen, for example. There's been a lot of emphasis on bees learning about nectar, but bees need nectar and they need pollen, and plants have nectar and pollen. And so I've been doing experiments looking at how they learn about these two different rewards. And now building on that kind of fundamental basis that I have of understanding the bee behavior, now I'm looking to see how these neonicotinoid pesticides might be affecting that behavior.
This year, you won a very prestigious award from the cosmetic giant L'Oreal, and it's to support women scientists. The award has been around for about 14 years, and only 70 women have ever been awarded this grant, which also comes with $60,000. How did you feel about winning this award, and what do you plan to do with the grant, and how will that advance your work?
Yeah, I felt really honored. And having that kind of money in research is, it's really helpful, because especially in animal behavior research, there isn't a ton of funding. So half of the funding I'm going to be using to hire an assistant for the year. The money will also allow me to buy some equipment that I need. And also a chunk of it is going to go towards outreach activities. So I'm going to be partnering with Nevada Bugs and Butterflies, which is a local pollinator outreach nonprofit, and the Girl Scouts of Sierra Nevada. And we're going to organize what hopefully will be a really fun day for young women in Reno to learn more about science and about the pollinators right here in Reno.
And then as a woman scientist, do you think there's still a glass ceiling in STEM fields?
I think that, like in a lot of fields, there are still problems that need to be overcome. It's gotten better than it was, but there is still discrepancy in the number of women that stay on to more senior positions in science. I personally have been really lucky. I've worked with 3 female mentors throughout my career, and so far I've tended to be in a more female-dominated field. But I know from my colleagues in other fields that there are still big problems, for example, in subjects like maths and physics and computer science, where there's a massive gender discrepancy.
What do you think can be done to continue to encourage women to pursue science and technology, engineering and math?
First of all, we have to encourage science early on. There are certain kind of social stereotypes that we have that say, I think it's more okay for a 10-year-old boy to be excellent at math than it is for a 10-year-old girl. And so I think there are certain social norms we have to change. Even just in the media, the kind of cartoons and television that people watch about scientists, they're always old men in white lab coats. And that's just not representative of who scientists are. And then I think that once we have women in science, we know that, for example, at the PhD level, there are a much higher proportion of women than once you get to postdoc level or professor level. And I think just because as we become adults, there are more things that we have to deal with, like, for example, childcare, that is kind of unfairly weighted right now towards the role that women have to play. And so I think that then there's, you know, a whole load of other societal factors that we need to change, for example, relating to parental leave and that kind of thing. But it's not an easy one to solve.
Felicity Muth is a postdoctoral fellow at UNR in the biology department. Thank you for taking your time to talk with us today.
Thank you.